mental health doesn't work the same way. Right. And that each person is their own kind of system, which right. you can't figure that out. And it's really, to me, it's really quite sad as a mental health professional, because we really are only using mental health inpatient treatment just to address dangerousness to self or others. And if you're not a danger to self or others, then you don't meet the criteria for being in
right.
the hospital.
That's right.
And what's really sad to me is that that's almost like expecting to pour the cement for a foundation of a house and then remove the wood before it's had a chance to even begin to get solid.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is one of the greatest, I don't know, I say travesties, but that's where we're missing the boat, because we aren't helping people get well enough so that when they do actually leave the hospital, they're well enough to maybe be able to do some of this on their own. Instead,
right.
that we're just sending them home so quickly. And again, you know, that's the system in general. And boy, I could stay here for hours and talk with you about
and,
that yeah, one.
Unfortunately, a lot of the people who are facing these problems have no one in the immediate area that can stand up for them and, you know, and help them. So they're pretty much on their own.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do? You know, it's kind of sad.
Well, it is sad. It's really sad. And I think that, you know, not that this is your role, but that's also where some of, you know, the supports in the community and NAMI, you know, I've known NAMI Mercer, and because that's where I've worked mostly, mm-hmm. is down in Mercer County, you know. But that's where having those supports in the community can also sometimes be a lifeline, you know.
Right.
And that's where I know we have, you know, say the Just Friends and some of the get-together. That's where even the Getting Together Center here
sure.
in you know, in Flemington is so important, so that even if you don't have people in your life, you can have some sort of supports in your life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not have to be alone. But
right.
you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that's the whole idea to me is, you know, this idea of being an advocate is actually creating a voice and saying, no,
sure.
this isn't
absolutely.
Enough.
Absolutely.
You know, and that, you know, and those of us that have a voice, it just means we kind of have to talk that much louder for those who don't.
Or bang a little harder on the table, one or the other. Yeah.
Well, that too.
I know I can probably figure out some of the things your board wants to change, you know, to make parity take place. What I know that, you know, like what we're talking about is one of them. Is there anything else?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, one, becoming knowledgeable, and that's why I love you having the chance to give me the chance to do this. And two is becoming a squeaky wheel. You know, if things don't end up turning. I can't tell you how many stories I've heard from people who said, you know what, Carol, I just had to say this or say that in order to get the help that I needed. And and that's where our healthcare system shouldn't have to be like that, you know.
No, I agree.
And stories, I mean, if you've got stories, I want to know them. I want to hear them. And the goal is to be a resource for people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, what's really scary is the thing you were talking about is the Mental Health Association of New Jersey did a study. And in this study, what they did was that they went through, you know, like insurance plans give you their list of doctors.
Right.
So they went through this list of doctors, psychiatrists, and therapists. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't know the numbers exactly, but I'm going to say that about 33%.
They're going to drop their medication and not take it. B, they're going to. They're going to go down the tubes again.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part. And the other sad part, there was a survey done here in Hunterdon County. And with the population and everything, it was psychiatrists. Oh, but they have psychiatrists on Skype in, you know, Nevada or Arizona or wherever. And, you know, in 2 minutes, they can read what this person wrote, and they'll make a decision. No, release them. No, we won't commit them, you know, or whatever.
Right.
And it's actually there in the room.
Yep. they call it tele-something or other. Yeah. Telepsychiatry or teleradiology. You're absolutely right.
And they're not there examining the patient where they may come up with something that was missed. Yeah. All they're doing is reading a report because they're 3,000 miles away. Or less. I mean, you know, they could be in Tennessee and we're up here or vice versa or whatever, you know. And I just...
You've just made me think of something, though, Larry. Uh-oh. I mean, and if you think about it, though, it is this kind of movement away from, you know, healthcare in a very personalized, very personal experience as opposed to even, like, following the line of technology. And you know, and how kind of moving in that direction away from, it's like when you would call and get the stupid voice recordings trying to get somebody, you know.
Right.
And, but, yeah, that is definitely
and that's
this
the
big
where
shift.
It's, that's where it's going.
Definitely this big shift.
And, you know, I want to see him do it with a dentist. That's what I want to see him do. But I'm sorry I had to say that. But, you know, it's sad because they are doing it with medical.
Yeah.
They're doing it with mental.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and I understand why.
Yeah.
I don't agree with it personally, but that's me, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that I'm a daughter of a doctor, you know, so I know that it's about that relationship and it's about that kind of connecting, and also that connecting that you do too. I mean,
sure.
Outside of even what you're talking about, which is really the scope of practice, to me that other piece of it is really critical. You know, and that, I mean, God, I hope that's not, you know, we don't end up being like the Jetsons or something like that.
Well, I don't know. It seems like it's going that way though, doesn't it? How would the board you're with, you know, if they come up with an idea, how would they put that into practice?
As an idea, as in,
you know, something with parity or whatever. How would they? Is there a procedure that they have to follow?
Well, when it comes to parity, yeah, there's a pretty good, you know, kind of appeals you know, process that exists, and the first appeal that somebody should do is, if you've been denied care, is actually you should contact your insurance company, you know, and gather some information from them, you know, ask why things were denied. And you do that over the phone. And then if that doesn't work, you actually then ask them how to do a written appeal. And you take those steps to put it in writing. I was taught if it ain't in writing, it didn't happen, you know. And then let's say I appeal my insurance company and they still say, Carol, we're not going to pay for any more treatment. Guess what? I can ask for an external review. That actually there's one other step, which they call it an external review. And I don't know if you've heard of these. I've definitely in the news heard of them, where people were denied a treatment, you know, and then it went to external review, and that's this outside person said, no, this person does, you know, qualify or does need this. And so it's not within the insurance plan itself, outside. And then even if I run into a no there, guess where I'm going? To my state. You know, I'm going here in New Jersey, you know, to file a complaint. But I think the biggest thing is that we just don't sit back and just go with the flow and do nothing.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since you've been on this board, have you seen any changes?
Well, I've just kind of been, this is all new for me too, you know, and I have to say I'm really pretty excited.
Is it new for the board that you're on?
It's actually a new project to do this parity education. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why when, you know, I was like excited just to be here and talking with you about it.
Sure.
You know, because there's a lot that we don't know, and if you don't know it, then how are you going to do something about it, right?
Right. Right. If I have to ask this, and I probably know the answer already, or I think I do. But if mental illness is a sickness of the brain, which it is.
It is.
Why do you feel it's treated so different than any other illness, like diabetes or heart disease or cancer or whatever? I'm not saying that those illnesses aren't, you know, severe, and you know, but so is mental illness. And you're talking about a chemical imbalance of the brain that causes mental illness, So therefore, the brain got sick. The psychiatrist in the county, because their waiting list is, you know, how many? That's why they're in and they're out. They're in and they're out. Write a prescription, let them out. Write a prescription, let them out.
Well, they have a lot of people that they're
because they don't have, you know, the time. And that's so sad, too.
Yeah. Larry, the same woman from Mental Health Association, Barbara Johnston, is the woman, her kind of advocate there.
Now, the patient has a right to say, no, they don't want to have Skype. Mm-hmm. And then they have to wait till a psychiatrist comes in. And usually it's the next morning. But it's just what we've come up with to try to solve these problems. We don't have enough psychiatrists. Oh, but they have psychiatrists on Skype in, you know, Nevada or Arizona or wherever. And, you know, in 2 minutes they can read what this person wrote and they'll make a decision. No, release them. No, we won't commit them, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's, to me, it's like, really? You know? But that's what they're doing because there's a lack of psychiatrists.
I met somebody that actually lived in Tennessee, and because kind of where they are and kind of out and kind of there's not a lot of health resources, and they use that kind of the tele thing for a lot of different things, their mental health as well as their physical health, you know. And you know, again, to me it kind of comes back to the fact that when you're dealing with physical health, you can take my blood pressure, you could take my temperature, you could do all these things, and they're very concrete, you know, very measurable. That when it comes to mental health, we don't have those kinds of tests, you know. And so it, for me, it's kind of like there's a lot that each individual person, you know, to me, mental health is different than physical health in that way, you know. I guess if you said, well, Carol, you can have this or nothing at all, I guess I'm going to pick the, you know, the something rather than the nothing. But
yeah, but
know.
even with medical help, person is not actually there in the room.
Yep. They call it tele something or other. Yeah. Telepsychiatry or teleradiology. Like you're absolutely right.
And they're not there examining the patient, where they may come up with something that was missed. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is reading a report because they're 3,000 miles away or less. I mean, you know, they could be in Tennessee and we're up here or vice versa or whatever, you know. And I just...
You've just made me think of something, though, Larry. Uh-oh. I mean, and if you think about it, though, it is this kind of movement away from, you know, healthcare in a very personalized, very personal experience, as opposed to even like following the line of technology and you know, and how kind of moving in that direction away from, it's like when you would call and get the stupid voice recordings trying to get somebody, you know, and but yeah, that is definitely
and
this
that's the
big
where
shift.
It's, that's where it's going.
Definitely this big shift.
And you know, I want to see him do it with a dentist. That's what I want to see him do. But I'm sorry I had to say that. But you know, it's sad because they are doing it with medical. Yeah. They're doing it with mental.
Yeah.
And you know, and I understand why.
Yeah.
I don't agree with it personally, but that's me, you know.
Well, I think it's that I'm the daughter of a doctor, you know, so I know that it's about that relationship and it's about that kind of connecting, and also that connecting that you do too. I mean, outside of even what you're talking about, which is really the scope of practice, to me that other piece of it is really critical, you know, and that. I mean, God, I hope that's not, you know, we don't end up being like the Jetsons or something like that.
Well, I don't know. It seems like it's going that way, though, doesn't it? How would the board you're with, you know, if they come up with an idea, how would they put that into practice?
As an idea, as in?
As in, you know, something with parity or whatever. How would they, is there a procedure that they have to follow?
Well, when it comes to parity, yeah, there's a pretty good, you know, kind of appeals process that exists. And the first appeal that somebody should do is if you've been denied care, is actually you should contact your insurance company, you know, mm-hmm. and gather some information from them, okay. you know, ask why things were denied. And you do that over the phone. And then if that doesn't work, you actually then ask them how to do a written appeal. And you take those steps to put it in writing. I was taught if it ain't in writing, it didn't happen, you know. And then let's say I appeal my insurance company and they still say, Carol, we're not going to pay for any more treatment. Guess what? I can ask for an external review that okay. actually there's one other step, which they call it an external review. And I don't know if you've heard of these. I've definitely in the news heard of them where people were denied a treatment, you know, and then it went to external review. And that's this outside person said, no, this person does, you know, qualify or does need mm-hmm. this. And so it's not within the insurance plan itself, outside. And then even if I run into a no there, guess where I'm going? To my state. You know, I'm going here in New Jersey, you know, to right. file a complaint. But I think the biggest thing is that we just don't sit back and just go do with nothing. The flow and do nothing. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Since you've been on this board, have you seen any changes?
Well, I've just kind of been, this is all new for me too, you know, and I have to say I'm really pretty excited.
Is it new for the board that you're
it's
on?
It's actually a new project to do this parity education. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why when, you know, I was like excited just to be here and talking with you about it.
Sure.
You know, because there's a lot that we don't know, and if you don't know it, then how are you going to do something about it, right?
Right. Right. If I have to ask this, and I probably know the answer already, or I think I do. But if mental illness is a sickness of the brain, which it is.
It is.
Why do you feel it's treated so different than any other illness, like diabetes or heart disease or cancer or whatever? I'm not saying that those illnesses aren't,
right.
Severe, and you know, but so is mental illness. And you're talking about a chemical imbalance of the brain that causes mental illness, so therefore the brain got sick. The brain is an organ, just like your heart, your lungs, your liver, and it got sick. Why is it treated so different than any other illness?
Well, I'll tell you what my kind of thoughts are on that.
Okay.
One is the symptoms that the illness that people exhibit when they experience that illness is very, very different than
sure.
if I have a heart attack or,
right.
But I also think, and it goes back just looking at those behaviors and how those behaviors through history were actually dealt with. And again, you think of your brain, right? People think of their brain as their mind. So if it's my brain, then it's kind of more having to do with my personality and this. Or the truth is, your mind and your brain are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm so grateful that we have research that is now backing that up, that
right.
we know that mental health illnesses are brain-based.
Mm-hmm.
And going so far as even substance use disorders. I mean, there's plenty of research that shows that my brain might be that person that kind of becomes completely addicted to that pain medication where somebody else may not be.
Right.
And I think that's been the case. You can measure it, too. Think about this. You have a heart attack. So they have all these tools and tests that they can do to be able to measure
mm-hmm.
your physical health. Well, what do you do to measure mental health? You know, like concrete sort of stuff. We're getting it now with the images
right.
and the PET scans
right.
and those kinds of things. But I think because of that difference in the two, for me, that's how I feel like they started being, kind of treatment. But you're absolutely right, and I think that that's the important part. And then the stigma that goes along with those behaviors.
Right.
You know, and you and I know that people with mental health issues, you know, are not the people that are responsible for the greatest number of homicides, even though
right.
lots of other people want to make you think that.
They're
you
more
know.
Apt to be the victim of a crime
yeah.
than actually the
absolutely.
Perpetrator. Yeah.
And
unfortunately, there's more people with mental illness in jails than in psychiatric hospitals. And that's a fact.
It is?
Yep.
Yes, it is. It's kind of like the largest psychiatric treatment providers.
Yeah.
Or non-treatment providers.
Or non-treatment providers, because they don't get much treatment.
Right.
Well, do you see a light at the end of the tunnel for people with mental health issues?
I do. Oh, my goodness. When I started 23 years ago and thinking about just a little bit of medications that we had, and that I think what's kind of wonderful, too, is that research is demonstrating that there isn't just one treatment for one person. You know,
right.
That different things are going to work for different people. And if you find that one thing doesn't work for you, then there's other things for you to try. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about, the difference between physical and mental health, right? We know that, I don't take blood pressure medicine, but we know that certain blood pressure medicine is going to work for 90% of people. You can't say that with any of these psychiatric medications because they're all so different.
Well, what they do is they issue the ones that have been proven over the years to have worked the best in similar situations, and they try them first.
Yeah, but you and I know lots of people have been through a bunch of meds.
No, I understand. And it's not always the same
combinations.
And because your body's different than mine, it adjusts different. Or they may say, okay, you take this, but then we'll add this to stop your foot from shaking or your hand from shaking. And, it goes on and on.
It's kind of dominoes that can go down the road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
here's the thing. When I think back and when I started 23 years ago in mental health and the medications, back then it was just the beginning of Prozac and, that kind of debate. And I've found that medication, for a lot of people, it's a very personal issue. I mean, for me, I need medication to manage that part of my depression.
Right.
I've tried it before, tried to go without it, and it's just a little part of my life. But like I say, no different than if I was, managing my diabetes as well as my blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
The illness doesn't go away, but I think we have more tools to be able to manage them today than we do. And I think that there's even more and more tools yet to come to give us that opportunity.
Hopefully. The problem is trying to get people to accept that. That's
the other. See, the light's going to be there. Now, whether we can get people walking towards it is a whole other thing.
Right. Right. Exactly. But,
you want it.
And some people will and some won't.
That's
always been the way,
Yep. Well, I have a stigma campaign that I want to do. Because you can look, it's great that we have all these famous people, who are showing that just because you have a mental health diagnosis doesn't mean you can't be successful in life, right?
Right.
But they're kind of famous people. So how am I going to relate to Demi Lovato or, Howie
Buzz
Mandel
Aldrin,
or Buzz Aldrin or, Terry Bradshaw I'm not them. So what I want to do is I want to get a picture of a group of five or six people. I want it to be, it could be a vet, like a soldier, could be one of them, a police officer, a fireman, a nurse, a doctor, and a teacher, and a judge. And I'll put seven people together, and a picture in the caption is going to say which one of these has a mental health condition at the top. And then you look at the bottom, and it says all of them.
That would be hard, and I'll tell you why. Police officers, if they admit to it, are immediately suspended and put on leave. Paid firemen is the same way. That's why when they have, where we were talking about before, the vet to vet and stuff, they have police to
cop to cop too. Yes, they
now,
do.
The cops that man the phones are all retired. Because if someone calls and they're an active police officer from anywhere, I don't care, you pick it, New York City, whatever. And that person on the phone that is not a retired cop but an active duty cop, the first thing he has to do is report that man that's on the phone. Retired cop does not.
See, I've worked with police officers over the years that actually ended up going back to work. And the department knew that they went back
some
to work.
Some departments will allow it,
yeah.
And some don't.
Well, I want to find the one that does.
Because that's the problem. Yeah. That's why they have retired cops using the phones on cop to cop.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to report what is told to them over the phone.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just something I throw out there. If you want to do something like that, find a police department that is...
All right, so anybody knows of a police department, I want to hear.
With the times, you know?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And recognizing that, you know, the mental health condition can be treated just like the diabetes or the hypertension or... so that's my picture, though, because I want to see people like me, you know, that are kind of living well and kind of... And they say research shows that that's how you break the stigma down. Getting it to connect to people that you know and people that you're around every day, right?
And I think also that the famous people that have come out have helped.
Oh, I think they have too.
You know, you take somebody like you mentioned, Demi Lovato.
Yeah.
You know, she's very into helping an organization such as NAMI and such.
Yes. And she's young. And the other thing I love about it is she's 23 years old, and she hasn't waited till she was in her 40s or 50s to be well.
Right, right. Yeah. And I forget who it is that I saw a picture of, but her sister?
Glenn Close.
That's it.
Glenn Close.
Right,
yep.
And she's very active.
Yes.
And they told her, well, what are you doing this for? You could hurt your sister. She says, I don't care. It's my sister.
Yeah.
And this should get out. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's bravery.
Helping.
It's actually
absolutely.
That bravery
absolutely.
To kind of step
absolutely.
Out on,
sure.
step in the spotlight and
yep.
say, hey.
You know.
Yeah.
That's why I respect Bradshaw, because he did it years ago.
Yes, he did.
When nobody was coming out and doing it, you know.
I remember copying that for many of my male patients at the time.
Right.
You know, and that, you know, just needing somebody they could look to say,
sure.
listen.
Right.
Not a sign of weakness.
Right. No, absolutely. Okay. You're into helping. You're also big into helping people quit smoking. Having smoked for years. And quit the last 24 and a half.
Good for you. You did it the hard way.
Yeah. Well, they put me on an operating table, tilted me down and scraped my vocal cords and told me it was the only time they could do it. So, yeah, it was the hard way because they told me if not, they'd have to take them out. And can you imagine me with my big mouth talking through a hole in my throat? I don't think so.
I can't imagine you not talking.
No, I can't imagine me not talking either, but, you know, still with, you know. But anyway, I'm assuming you know that most people with schizophrenia
Ooh.
Smoke.
Yeah.
Because it helps quiet the voices
it
in
does.
Their head.
It does. It
doesn't stop them.
Nope.
But it quiets them. And I'm going to say it anyway. I understand that it's not healthy. Trust me, I understand perfectly. I haven't been a smoker and I'm, you know, now a non-smoker for all these years. My son, my younger son, who has mental health issues, smokes because of that, but he smokes. Now my wife says, you know, all the time. You gotta quit. Well, he's like me. He quit 110 times already, you know. He's tried the flameless cigarettes.
Oh, my goodness, the e-cigarette
thing.
Yeah,
the e-cigarettes. He's tried the pills. He's tried the patches. He's tried everything. And I look at it, yes, I know it's not healthy. I understand that totally. But then again, I look at what he's been through and what he's still going through. And if this helps.
Here's the thing, though. Taking 25 years off of his life.
Yeah, but that could do it with mental illness.
No, that actually, the
that's
research.
That's a proven fact that mental illness takes 25 years
but
off
here's
their life.
The thing,
they die earlier.
Add the cigarette smoking on top of that, and it actually adds another 10 to that.
I understand what you're saying, totally.
I hear what you're saying, too. It's kind of like, listen, in life, if I got one thing, you know, that I find pleasure, then it actually kind of feel like helps me. Here's the trick.
And, I'm not saying my son, but people that have no girlfriend, have no friend, or not close friends, don't have a job.
Yep.
You know.
That cigarette's it.
And that's it.
It's their best friend.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is why in my book, that really is, because, all right, so I titled it this so it kind of, you know, kind of rub people the wrong way. The benefits of smoking.
Why
it's so
hard. Why is it so hard to quit?
Yeah. No, why it's so hard to quit and what you can
do
about it. Because I honestly believe, Larry, there are three really big reasons and people get benefits from smoking. You definitely mentioned the one, and that is it's your always there for you best friend. All right. And for some people, that really is their kind of support system. The second thing is it becomes people's primary way of coping with their stress tool. I mean, that is their prime. It's like that automatic. You know, it's laid kind of like those neural pathways in the brain is like, oh, get stressed out. Go have a cigarette, you know. But then the third thing comes down to brain chemistry. And what we were talking about biologically is there's withdrawal. And we are fortunate in New Jersey, particularly around schizophrenia, and being able to kind of help quit smoking. And one of the things that what they found is that when somebody, let's say with a diagnosis of schizophrenia, goes into an emergency room, and they're actually used to smoking, which you're absolutely right, that nicotine kind of a little calming sort of thing. And they go into that emergency room, and they've been sitting in that ER for 4 hours. Guess what? They're going two hours, your body starts to go through withdrawal, you know, which is why you'll see somebody who's really, really dependent on nicotine sneaking out, to go have that cigarette because you got to feed the cookie monster because it's screaming at you. And actually, they've shown that if they would put a patch on that person sooner, as soon as they came into the emergency room and assessed that they actually are a smoker and were able to kind of calm the nicotine withdrawal, they're less agitated and the voices are actually decrease because that biological piece of it has been met. And that, to me, is, you know, the third benefit. Keeps you from going through withdrawal. Now, that's where nicotine replacement therapy and also where coaching becomes important because it kind of allows the body to wean off of it. And you talked about these e-cigarettes and, the problem is nobody knows what's in them. They're kind of like where smoking was 50 years ago, telling you, oh, they're good for you, they're good for you. And then look what we came to find out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But there's what a lot of people don't even realize is that you can wear a patch and you can also use the gum at the same time. You know, the problem I have found is that people will say, oh, that patch didn't work for me. But it didn't work because it's not enough. You know, you're still having urges to smoke and the nicotine withdrawal because the patch isn't giving you enough. If you're smoking two packs a day, guess what? You got to be having those little pieces of gum, you know, every two hours.
The thing is, they put me on a patch. You know, real quick, we got about 2 minutes left. They put me on a patch, but at that time it was by a prescription.
Yeah.
And it was like 12, 8, 6, 5, 4.
Kind of decreased.
And
you.
It decreased every two weeks. Now it's not that way. Now you buy it over the counter and it's, you know, one thing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But back then it was different levels.
Yeah.
The more you smoke, the higher the levels.
Yeah.
And I had it on for 6 weeks and thought I was going to get addicted to the patch, so I stopped wearing it and haven't smoked since.
Wow.
But, you know, if somebody lights up a Marlboro, I have to walk away.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I believe that.
Trust me, I do.
I know.
The other cigarettes they light up, I think, stink. Yeah. But the Marlboro, you know, with my addictive personality. Real quickly, if someone wanted to get a hold of you for a presentation or advice, how would they do that? Email, phone? Website?
Actually, probably the easiest thing is phone, and that is, it's a real easy number. It's 888, so 888, and then the word life, and the word tools, LIFETOOLS.
888,
yep.
Life tools.
Yep.
Okay.
Punch that into your phone using the little letters on the phone, and you will get me.
All right. Carol, I can't thank you enough. It's always a pleasure having you here.
Oh, I love coming and talking with you, Larry.
And you know, trust me, you'll be back.
I'm hoping to.
Yes, you will.
I'm glad you got your vocal cords too.
Yeah, still got them. You know, but remember, if you'd like the newest books that Carol wrote, it's Transforming Illness to Wellness, and it's The Benefits of Smoking, Why It's So Hard to Quit, and What You Can Do About It. Mm-hmm. And her phone number was 888
Life, L-I-F-E, Tools, T-O-O-L-S. Yep.
All right. We'll be not here next week. I'll be up in Vermont, but and they will do a rerun of one of our previous shows. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. So everybody remember that mental health really does matter. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. Jeb Bush is pushing back against rumors his campaign is on the verge of folding. The former Florida governor is launching a new Jeb Can Fix It tour that's unveiling a new campaign message during a speech in Tampa. It's focused on his record as Florida governor and promoting a more hopeful and optimistic message that he says Republican voters are getting from his opponents. A recent survey suggests that baby boomers are not all that pleased with the U.S. healthcare system. The survey by the healthcare provider MDVIP found that the system has some of the problems usually attributed to nationalized healthcare systems.
It takes too long to get an appointment, weeks at the minimum. Patients cannot be seen urgently when they need to be. They spend a long time in the waiting room, and then they have a hurried visit with a doctor.
MDVIP founder Dr. Bernard Kamenetsky says doctors in most healthcare institutions now have to see around 30 patients a day, mostly to treat chronic illnesses. You're listening to USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett.
Did you know the government is scheming to seize your retirement and bank accounts? Hi, David Fisher, CEO of Landmark Capital Gold Group. Get the facts in a white paper called How to Protect Your Retirement and Bank Accounts from Government Seizure. Transfer your 401k or IRA into physical gold and silver and take.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
To the Asia-Pacific region, John Clemens reports.
In comments to the news media during his visit to the South Korean side of the heavily fortified demilitarized zone, Mr. Carter called on Pyongyang to avoid provocations that would only add to tensions on the peninsula.
The ever-present danger is the reason why we speak of the ability to fight tonight. That's the slogan up here. No one ever wants to have to do that. But deterrence is guaranteed through strength.
Defense Secretary Carter called America's alliance with South Korea as ironclad. I'm John Clemens.
Kansas City Royals are being crowned World Series champions for the first time in 30 years. The Royals captured their first World Series title since 1985. You're listening to USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
Genetic testing is improving cancer diagnosis and treatment options. Dr. Richard Schilsky of the American Society of Clinical Oncology says it's making a big difference for patients.
Genetic testing can answer the outcome of the cancer, and importantly, it's being used very commonly these days to help determine the best therapy.
Dr. Schilsky says in a person with cancer, testing can identify gene changes that can help doctors map out a personalized treatment plan. In an individual who's disease-free, genetic testing can determine whether a person has a hereditary risk of developing certain cancers. Dr. Schilsky says genetic testing coupled with counseling has become an important part of cancer screening, diagnosis, and treatment. At least five people are dead after floodwaters swept through Texas. Three people died in the Austin area when they were swept away by waters over the weekend. One person was inside a car which went over a flooded-out bridge on Saturday. Carly Fiorina is set for a memorable appearance on The View this week. The Republican presidential candidate announced on Fox News this morning she will be a guest on the show Friday. Last week, The View co-host made fun of Fiorina's smile, saying she looked demented during the GOP debate on CNBC. Fiorina said the comments from co-hosts Michelle Collins and Joy Behar pointed out that when liberals don't like the message, they attack the messenger. Fiorina said the women of The View should man up and debate her on policies instead of talking about her face. You're listening to USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Weather this afternoon is going to be mostly sunny with a high near 67 and calm winds. Tonight it'll be patchy fog after 4 a.m. That's more like morning rather than tonight. Otherwise, mostly clear with a low around 42 with calm winds. Tuesday, patchy fog before 7 a.m. Otherwise sunny with a high near 72. Calm winds becoming west around 5 miles an hour. And Tuesday night, patchy fog after 5 a.m., otherwise clear with a low around 41 and calm winds. Wednesday, patchy fog before 7 a.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 76 and calm winds. Wednesday night, there's a slight chance of showers after 1 a.m., patchy fog after 5 a.m., and otherwise partly cloudy with a low around 45, and a chance of precipitation is only about 20%, so I guess it matters where you're at. We are, you're listening to Mental Health Matters. This is a NAMI Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no paid staff. We have no office. We work out of our houses, use our own phones. The one thing about nice about working out of your house, it's a short commute from the bedroom to the kitchen to work, so you don't have to fight traffic. And what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or they themselves have a mental health issue. And we do this by teaching classes. I teach a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course, for families who have someone, and it doesn't have to be a blood relative. It could be your next-door neighbor, someone you work with, a close friend, whatever. We run support groups, so people can come to a support group and be with others who are either going through the same thing they are or have just recently started going through it, and people can help each other. We have what they call a basics course for families who have children under the age of 18 who may be showing signs of a mental health issue. And we have what they call a educating the educator class, which in this day and age, in this economy, teachers are probably with the children a lot more than some adults, than some of the parents are, because of the work issues and so on and so forth. So teachers may be the first ones to spot something in one of the children in their class. Everything we do is free. There is no charge. And you can call. It's 908-284-0500. And someone will get back to you within 24 hours. It's not manned every minute of the day, but we do check messages twice a day. So we try to get back to people. We are very privileged today to have with us Carol Ricard, who's a licensed clinical social worker. Carol is a tobacco treatment specialist, and she has written over a dozen publications and conducted national training workshops on stress and wellness. She has also written 10 books. I had 8, but she told me it was 10. And she's a popular speaker and trainer at all types of conferences and events. She's the founder and CEO of Well You University, Y-O-U, LLC, which is a global health education and training company dedicated to empowering people with the tools and support to achieve lifelong wellness. Carol is also someone I consider a close friend. We've known each other a few years now. A few. And right now, Carol's on a board of a Trenton hospital, which is dealing with parity. And I know what kind of parity we're dealing with, but maybe the people out there don't. So maybe you'd like to elaborate a little bit about that, Carol.
Yeah, well, parity is a pretty amazing thing, because for many, 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 many years, if you had a mental health condition, it was never covered by your insurance company, quite the same way that physical health was.
In some cases, it still isn't.
It isn't, and yet that's why we're here talking about it, because right. It's supposed to be. But back in 2008, the couple senators, Wellstone and Pete Domenici, they finally got, it's illegal. It's actually a federal law, the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act. Okay, whew.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember all the whole thing. But basically what it says is that we have to treat mental health just the same way we treat physical health, as far as insurance plans and insurance coverage go. Now, we have a long ways to go around stigma and other levels and outside of insurance, treating them equally, but as far as getting care and access to care. So parity means that the two are not supposed to be treated any differently by an insurance company.
But very often they are. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah. We're actually trying to collect some stories from people. And so, Larry, if you've got some stories, I kind of want to hear them. But the thing about it is that you don't know what you don't know. And my goal is to help people learn so then they know what they don't know.
And, you know, it seems to me, well, it has in the past, up until, well, recently, a couple months ago, people with mental health issues, they receive a different care than the average patient.
Yeah.
And
I would agree with that statement.
In many cases, they receive less or no care. And a lot of doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, what have you, don't take insurance.
Yeah. Now, that in itself is a whole...
That's a different ballgame.
It is a whole different ballgame.
But that's part of parity.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you tell me how a person who's on SSI, or that's Social Security Income, or Social Security Disability, has to pay for his food or her food, their rent, and a doctor's thing, plus their medication.
And you know, Larry, most people maybe don't know, but the average around SSI is a little over $700 a month here in New Jersey. And so if you think about that dollar amount and what people are having to spend that on.
And you think about that in Hunterdon County, which is supposedly one of the richest counties in the state and the country. How do they do it?
That's actually one of my other kind of pet projects, or at least an area, is around supportive housing. You know, because there was just a campaign, actually, for the 2016 budget to try and get more money into the state budget so that those supported housing pieces could be there. I think I saw there are like almost 150,000 people in New Jersey that are currently living off of SSI, which if you think of living in New Jersey, $700 isn't going to get you very far.
Right.
But that's my other pet, you know. But what you brought up, so what it is it actually we're talking about three different issues here. We're talking, one, about parity, two, about access to care and clinicians and psychiatrists and psychologists, and three, actually affordable housing, you know, for people living with mental health issues. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And those, I mean, all three of those issues, I kind of feel like the thing that we can do, the most immediate thing about right now, is actually the parity. Because if you find that there's been a violation, and that's kind of part of what my job is to do, is to help educate people so they know. And a lot of people think, all right, it's up to the federal government to kind of take care of this, but it's not. It's actually us. Mm. You know, so I'll give you an example. Here's what parity means, because there was the parity law in 2008. And then, believe it or not, the Affordable Care Act actually strengthened the parity laws. And so there are three really big things people need to know about. One is that services have to be comparable. And I'll give you a couple examples of that.
Okay.
If they're going to pay for me to go see my physical therapist and they limit me to 26 visits, well, they also have to cover 26 visits to my talk therapist, so that it has to be equal across the board, comparable.
And does that have to be the same person?
No.
It has to be different people, right?
Well, a physical therapist and a psychotherapist would be two different things.
Right.
But the idea being therapy, and if they limit the number of visits, it has to be the same for medical as well as mental. So they can't say, okay, Carol, we're only going to let you go see your therapist 8 times this year. If they let me go see my physical therapist for my knee, 15 times. By law, they have to allow me 15 visits to see my other therapist. So it has to be even.
Mm.
It has to compare that way. Another example would be, let's say something you just, you know, let's say I had a heart attack and I wanted to go to, let's say, University of Pennsylvania for my heart treatment. And my insurance is going to cover that. And they're going to pay for me to go out of state, right? Well, when I had an episode and I needed to be hospitalized for my depression, and I said I want to go to University of Pennsylvania for treatment, they can't deny me because they've already covered it for my heart. So they also have to cover it for my head. Make a little bit of sense? So that's one of the big things about the parity law, is it has to be comparable.
But do they allow people to go out of state?
I don't know.
Without a big fuss and...
I don't know. But it is, if they would allow it for one thing, they have to allow it for something else. They can't say, nope, we're not going
to
do that.
Well, we have to find out whether they allow it for the one, you know.
Yeah. But, of course, who would want to go out anywhere, because we have a very good hospital here in Hunterdon. But geographically, that's one of the other areas, though, you know, is that if they limit me geographically for my physical health, they can limit me geographically for my mental health. But if they don't, so it's apples to apples. Mm-hmm. It has to compare apples to apples.
Right.
And then one of the other really interesting things, and you'll probably be familiar with this, is this term called medical necessity. And that is deciding whether or not you really need this treatment.
Right.
And that's where a lot lot of people get hung up. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this or heard of this with families, but you know what? Person's doing really, really, really poorly. Goes to the hospital thinking, all right, I need to be in the hospital because the voices are so loud, right?
Right.
And they don't hospitalize them, you know, because maybe the insurance company said you don't need it. And so that's the other thing that has to kind of begin to get to the same level. And what's the third thing that's really, really important is in the past, if I was denied treatment, the insurance company didn't have to tell me why.
Mm-hmm.
That medical necessity.
Right.
And here's the thing I've learned. There's no one definition. It's with all the gazillion insurance companies that we have. But what the law now says is that I can request that information, and the insurance company has to give it to me.
Okay.
In fact, right now, I'm in the process of requesting that information from my own insurance company,
mm-hmm.
my plan, because I want to know. And I can request this even before I need to use it. 30 days. The law says 30 days they have to give it to me. And if they don't...
Within 30 days they have to...
Within 30 days. Okay. And if they don't, then I'm going to take it up to the next step, and I can file an appeal. And that actually goes all the way up to here in New Jersey. It's kind of the division of, depending upon your insurance, you have Medicare and Medicaid, you got to go one place in our state.
Right.
And if you have, of course, private or group insurance, you have to go to another. But I'm lodging a complaint if I haven't gotten it within 30 days.
You'll probably get it in 29 and a half. You know?
Probably so.
Yeah.
But in the past, Larry, even, see, I've been on both sides of the coin. I've been the person, I've been the patient, so I've had to seek out my own treatment. And I've also been the therapist trying to get other people's treatment. You know, and I worked in programs where every 5 or 6 days I'd have to call the insurance company. That was actually good, 5 or 6 days. In the old days, it used to be every 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, all right, well, here's how Larry's doing. You know what? I think he still needs to be here a little while. Well, we don't think he needs to be. And I'm sure you've heard those stories.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the way it was. I mean, it was all kind of, I say, it actually, that the insurance companies, insurance plans, not companies, but their plans that were kind of like the wizard and the Wizard of Oz. And they would hide behind a veil of secrecy so that mm-hmm. they could say no and nobody knew
why. Right.
And now the law says they can't hide that information anymore to us.
And you know, I think a lot of it, too, is in the ER. Someone goes into the ER and they run all sorts of tests and everything, and they're not quite as bad as when they first came in 7 hours prior, and they release them,
yeah.
or they want to release them.
Yeah.
If that person has nobody there with them, no family or anything, and they're there by themselves, 9 times out of 10 they'll get released.
Yeah.
We had a incident, I'm speaking from experience now, where my youngest son, who has a mental health issue, was with his older brother at his older brother and his brother's wife's house, and he had an issue. And the brother called us and said, you know, Dad, we got to get son to the hospital. So I said, all right, we'll meet you in the ER. Now, he was in there about 7 hours. They ran numerous tests. The RN came in, the in-charge nurse. Okay, we're going to release him. I went, what? You're going to do what? I says, I wouldn't do that if I were you. I says, you're going to release him like that? Where are you going to send them? Well, you don't know where you're going to send them. You're just going to release them out onto the street. That's not going to happen. I said, and if it does, I says, I will sue you. 5 minutes later, this other nurse comes in. She says, would you mind if we kept your son overnight and did some more tests in the morning, because it was the weekend, so a lot of times they can't do certain tests because they're not there on the weekend.
They're not there on the weekend.
Right. So, that's fine. That's what we wanted anyway.
Right.
I mean, if he was alone,
nobody to advocate for him. Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying with a lot of people. They have no one to stand up for them.
Yeah.
And a lot of this happens. It can happen in the best hospitals. It can happen in the worst hospitals.
Yeah.
It happens. You know, I'm not saying which hospital he was in, but I'm just saying that it can happen anywhere.
And, you know, it's so frustrating for me, aside from this whole parity issue, is that when I started working in the field 23 years ago, down in South Jersey, our average length of stay was 21.